The date is September 18th, 1998, and we're watching Rush Hour. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Detective Carter to my Inspector Lee.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, we brought back one of our regular guests on this show for the fourth time, someone that talked about this movie, I believe, last time he was here, saying how much he loves it. Or at least during Lethal Weapon he did. But my son, Chris Wells. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back.
So this week we're looking back at September 1998, when the movies in theaters were Rounders, Knock Off, Van Damme classic, Elizabeth, Who Am I?, which, if the title isn't familiar, is another Jackie Chan movie, and of course our movie for today, Rush Hour, which earned $244.4 million on a $35 million budget.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. And as always, please be reminded that there will be spoilers ahead. So even though this movie is, quick math, for
22. Almost 23, yeah. But yeah, 22.
Almost 23. 23 years old, there will be spoilers. So if you haven't watched this movie, please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
The tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I have found four. The first is, two cops. One is all talk, the other is all action.
Accurate.
The second is the fastest hands in the East meet the biggest mouth in the West.
That's the one on the DVD case.
Yep. Third, I've got Pals Forever, if they can get past today. And finally, they come from different cultures, but on a case this big, they speak the same language.
The first two I like, the last two I feel like they're a bit of a reach.
Well, they may not be the best descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
I mean, I actually feel like mine is closer to the first two, so
okay.
Maybe I encompass all four a little bit. Chief Inspector Lee is one of China's finest police officers. LAPD Detective James Carter is one of America's loudest. When the Chinese ambassador's daughter, Su Young, is kidnapped by the evil Juntao, Lee is brought over to aid the FBI in their investigation, who in turn bring Carter in to babysit Lee and keep him out of the way. Will Lee and Carter be able to set aside their cultural and professional differences in time to rescue Su Young? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
So, now, I know during Lethal Weapon, like I mentioned, Chris, you were all over this movie, and I know you said that if we did this movie, you had to be there for it. What is it about Rush Hour for you?
It's just, again, like the other movies I've been on, well, at least Austin Powers is the one that I've been on here for. It's just one of those movies that I've seen more than I can remember. Like, it's one of those top three that I've seen just a million times, just over and over again, and
yeah.
Not a huge fan of the third one, but Rush Hour 1 and 2, like, just on repeat, I would watch those over and over and over and over again. I love those movies.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I know I like a good buddy cop movie myself, so, and this is one of the better ones, I'd like to think.
Well, and it's also the Jackie Chan aspect. Like, it's just, all of his movies are just really fun action movies. Like, this guy, he found out that he can dodge things really well, and he just made a whole living out of it. Like, Drunken Master, all of his movies are fantastic. Like, it makes a fun action movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know I mentioned the fact that Who Am I was in theaters at the same time. I believe Who Am I only opened in Hong Kong, though, from what I could find on box office numbers. So I don't think it was actually directly competing, except in China.
Okay.
So, so Colin, what about you? What's your experience with Rush Hour?
I think actually similar to Austin Powers, I watched Rush Hour for the first time in elementary school on one of those days where it was like the teacher let somebody bring a movie in for the class to watch.
Yeah.
And I just remember loving it. It was one of those movies. I remember being really fascinated by the gun handoff.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you guys remember, but like, I remember me and my friends would just practice that to be like, oh, how do you do it so fast, and see if you could do it.
Out there with your super soakers kind of... practicing.
Yeah. And just thinking that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, I'm pretty sure it's the first buddy cop movie I ever watched. So
now, you mentioned that, you know, that a teacher let someone bring it into class. Do you think they were aware of the language at the time? Or are we, you know, now looking at this with 1998 eyes going, okay, I think Jackie Chan saying that particular word might not fly in a movie these days.
Yeah, I feel like the teachers generally didn't. And I guess I would have, 1998, I would have been in junior high. So maybe it was actually like grade 7.
Slightly more age appropriate.
Yeah, slightly more age appropriate. But yeah, I don't think the teachers ever ever really vetted any of the movies that people brought in. So. But I actually rewatched the entire Rush Hour trilogy. It was one of my first when the pandemic started, and I was like, oh, well, I suddenly have a lot more time to catch up on all, or like to rewatch some old classics and catch up on all the TV I've not watched. And Rush Hour was one of those things that I went back to, and I do agree with Chris. The first and second ones are top-notch. The third is, like, very bad.
Yeah, the third might as well have been called, like, Rush Hour 3 : Cash Grab. Yeah. I mean, that's basically what it was at that point. Yeah, I know for me, this was my introduction to Jackie Chan, and I remember after this came out, that's when I did the deep dive, and... Mm-hmm. on Jackie Chan, and that's when I found Drunken Master and all the ones that he'd done, like Super Cop and that. So I remember this sent me into a Jackie Chan spiral when it first came out. Yeah.
Yeah, I probably haven't seen any Jackie Chan movies that came before Rush Hour, but I definitely love like Shanghai Noon with Owen Wilson. And I remember going to the theater to watch The Tuxedo.
Yeah.
which was not a great movie.
No, not really. Or Spy Next Door. Spy Next Door.
Yeah, Spy Next Door.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into Rush Hour. It's directed by Brett Ratner, who is a big music video director for artists like Madonna, Mariah Carey, and Miley Cyrus, among others. And he also directed Rush Hour 2 and 3, Money Talks for more Chris Tucker, Red Dragon, and X3. Why the groan, Chris?
You know, he's... definitely not the greatest guy.
Did he get canceled for something? I feel like he was.
Oh yeah, he's just as bad as Weinstein, as far as I'm aware. Like,
is it that bad? See, I didn't know the full Brett Ratner. I thought Bryan Singer had you know, like with the X-Men connection. I thought Bryan Singer was the creepier of the two.
Well, yeah, I think more Brett Ratner is also just a major asshole. Like, okay. He has the term I hear everybody coin him with is Brett the Rat Ratner. Okay. So I assume he doesn't have a very good standing with just people in general, let alone the people he's allegedly sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. So
gotcha.
I mean, he definitely broke my heart with X3, so I don't think I've forgiven him for that.
Anything else he does is just icing on that cake of misery and disappointment that you got from The Last Stand. Yeah. It's produced by Roger Birnbaum, who produced all three Rush Hours, Shanghai Noon and Nights, Bruce and Evan Almighty, Wanted, The Perfect Score, which is a heist movie I love. Oh, that's old school Chris Evans and Scarlett Johansson.
That's a good movie, yeah.
High school students trying to steal the answers to the SATs. I love that movie. I love a good heist movie, yeah. And then lately, his bread and butter seems to be a lot of the reboot and reimagining type movies like Underdog, G.I. Joe, RoboCop, Magnificent Seven, Death Wish, Footloose. You know, it's also produced by Jonathan Glickman, who has many of the same credits as Roger Birnbaum, and also produced by Arthur Sarkissian, who produced all three Rush Hours, plus he's executive producer on the short-lived Shitty series and the series Vegas.
I forgot that there was a Rush Hour TV series. Did you guys watch it?
I watched it. Yeah, we talked about this in Lethal Weapon because you brought it up. So that just shows you that in 4 months you have already repressed that memory.
It's funny. It is a very forgettable TV show. It's so bad.
Yeah, I know you brought it up to Chris at the time, and he got excited about hearing that there was a Rush Hour series.
It's
and you
coming
let him
back
down.
To me now.
So, yeah, I know I watched it, but I don't know whether Chris, after our discussion, decided to check it out.
I have seen clips from it, and yeah, it looks like it would grow old pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. It's written by Ross LaManna, who gets the characters credit on the sequels and the series, and also a writer of Chrome Soldiers, Arctic Blue, Maximum Impact, and a Titanic miniseries that was on. It's also written by Jim Koof, who gets the Based On credit for the series, but not the sequels, and also wrote Operation Dumbo Drop, Stakeout, Disorganized Crime, National Treasure, and is the creator of the TV show Grimm. And then, so we open this movie on the Hong Kong harbor, and we see a boat packing Chinese artifacts, and the people on the boat are being silently taken out, and we find out that the source of this commotion is Inspector Lee, played by Jackie Chan, who reprises the role in both sequels, Shanghai Noon and Nights. He's in Karate Kid Remake, Kung Fu Panda, you know, Jackie Chan. He's looking for someone named Jun Tao, but he is told by the blonde Asian henchman Sang that Jun Tao is everywhere. Ooh.
Did you guys watch it? Did you have the DVD or did you watch it on Netflix?
No, DVD. DVD for me, at least.
Well, I watched it on Netflix.
My Netflix, for whatever reason, did not do English subtitles for all the Chinese talking.
Really?
So when I watched it, I had no idea what they were saying. I loosely remembered from all the other times I watched it, but it was very strange.
Huh. That is weird, because I even had the thought in my head as I was watching it, is I'm like, it's refreshing to see subtitles. It's refreshing to see that they're not making all the Chinese characters speak English. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I did enjoy that aspect of it.
Yeah, you know, come to think of it, I don't think there was a lot of subtitles after the very beginning. Yeah.
It's really only the beginning where the subtitles are, because for the rest of it, I think everyone speaks English.
Well, no, like the henchmen's in the restaurant and stuff like that, and there's a couple of lines back towards Chris Tucker kind of thing, like them when they're vibing outside of the restaurant, like becoming buddy cops.
The two scenes I noticed it most were this opening scene, and then there's a scene later on where Consul Han and Lee are having a conversation in Chinese.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, in the bedroom. Yeah, yeah.
Netflix, if you're listening, get on it.
Get on it. Sang is played by Ken Leung, who was in Lost, Star Wars The Force Awakens, X3, Red Dragon. Huh, those last two sound familiar. I guess Brett Ratner liked working with him.
He plays a one-inch Spike Man.
And in the movie Saw, he played a character called Detective Sing. So he's been Sing and Sang, but no Sung or Song yet from all the credits that I saw. But he's got at least two of the tenses of the word Sing in there.
there's still time.
That's right. But despite Lee's best efforts, Sang gets away. But man, his backup is so slow in arriving. Because, like, he calls for backup immediately upon getting on that boat or taking out the first couple guys. He calls and says, I need my backup. And then we've got, like, a 5-minute scene before his backup shows up. Shouldn't they just be around the corner if they're there as his backup?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends. You would have thought that something like that would have been, like, an operation. So yeah, they would have just been around the corner. But I mean, Lee also seems like the type of guy who might just run solo and then call people later and they'd be like, oh, we didn't even realize you were out.
Oh, so there's more of a parallel between him and Carter than we think. He's a one-man crew too. So
yeah, maybe.
So we get the words on the screen, Hong Kong, last day of British rule, and we meet the British commander Griffin, who is having a going-away party for Consul Han because he's taking up a new post in the United States. Commander Griffin is played by Tom Wilkinson, who was in The Green Hornet, Valkyrie. He was Carmine Falcone in Batman Begins. But I know him best as Full Monty. Or at least that was my first and most memorable Tom Wilkinson role. I always think of him as the old guy in Full Monty. And Consul Han, who is played by Tai Ma, which I had to find out the pronunciation of that because it's spelled T-Z-I. He reprises his role in Rush Hour 3, he was in Veep, 24, a bunch of other TV, RoboCop 2, and the live-action Mulan.
Now this is obviously why you brought me on, right, is to discuss the historical significance of this scene?
I brought you on because you wanted to come on, but sure, if you've got history for us, go ahead and give us some history.
Well, this takes place during the 1998 handover of Hong Kong after around 200 years of British rule. They lost a big war over the sale of opium and were forced to hand over a couple of trading ports to the British. And they took it for, I think it was 100 years or something like that. And then they had to give it back eventually. And now it's run under two systems inside of China. And obviously there's some things going down in there, particularly this year and last year. So,
well, there you go. the more you know. I need the little the more you know jingle to throw in.
Yeah, it is. Hong Kong is a funny place. I went there in 2014.
Yeah.
And having been to like Europe, and then so we went to Hong Kong and then went into mainland China.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally is like two different countries. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, things are called like Victoria Ave and Elizabeth Street and stuff like that in Hong Kong. Until more recently, they've been changing a lot of those back to Chinese names and stuff like that. But yeah,
it's taking it back.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's an interesting place because it was ruled for like 100, 150 years by the British. So yeah. It's just this completely different place that's just attached to China. It's very interesting.
Well, Inspector Li comes in to tell the consul that they have recovered all the priceless Chinese artifacts, which also becomes part of this celebration. And Li leaves, and we are introduced to the consul's young daughter, Su Yang, who is played by Julia Su. This and an independent short from 2001 called Three Exits. That's it for her IMDb. The last line of her bio on IMDb reads, she is not a rapper, backup dancer, or aspiring Instagram, YouTube, or internet celebrity. It boggles my mind. Like, I don't understand why they feel the need to include this non-information on her bio.
I wonder if she was confused for one.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. That could be a possibility. So Su Yang is upset to know that Li isn't going with them to America, and because you didn't have subtitles, I'm sure you didn't get a chance to enjoy this line, the line where Li tells her, "Will you practice your kicks and eye gouges?" I love that line, telling this 11-year-old girl to practice her kicks and eye gouges.
Well, it's a very important line for later in the movie, which we'll discuss, but yeah, no, she definitely is a fighter, that's for sure.
Yeah. Then he tells her, "Don't worry, America is a friendly place." When we cut to Carter yelling at traffic, this we're told takes place in America 2 months later, and Carter is speeding across traffic in his Stingray Corvette, and I think that's as good as a spot as any to drop Sponsorship Corner!
Oh, this is the earliest Sponsorship Corner in a long time.
But always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Rush Hour is brought to you by Chevrolet, GMC, Ford, Mercedes, and Audi cars, Olympus and Nikon cameras, Jepson, Hitachi, Siemens, Epson, Panasonic, Sharp, ATS Courier, Miller Lite, and Corona Beers, Visa, MasterCard, Frito-Lay, Pepsi, and Coca-Cola, Payless Shoe Source, and United Airlines. Plus, a special shout-out to a few that may or may not be real. It's hard to tell. Broadway Gold Center, Spring Street Diner, Azteca Pool Hall, and the Hong Kong Export Company, plus Fu Chow Restaurant, which that one I did read is 100% real. They even have a sign that says, "Rush Hour was filmed here."
Nice.
And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Awesome that's their claim to fame is
Yeah. Rush
Hour filmed a scene here.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining like you walk in and there's a picture of the owners with Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker with the thumbs up.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I wouldn't be surprised if it's completely overhauled the entire interior look to reflect everything Rush Hour.
They have some props.
Oh, quite possibly. It's like, did you watch the last Blockbuster documentary?
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that, yeah, they've got all that...
The Russell Crowe
merchandise. Yeah, that's awesome. But then they've got the whole corner where people have sent in movie merchandise since then. It's amazing. Oh, I miss Blockbuster. So Carter speeds into the parking lot of a diner. And so I'll introduce Carter here. He is played by Chris Tucker, who reprised his role in both sequels. He was in Friday, The Fifth Element, Money Talks, Dead Presidents. I read that Martin Lawrence, Eddie Murphy, Dave Chappelle, Will Smith, and Tupac Shakur were all possibilities for the role of Carter.
Tupac is a very interesting avant-garde decision.
Yeah. I mean, after watching Bad Boys, I'm glad it wasn't Martin Lawrence because, you know, Chris Tucker is annoying, but he's a different kind of annoying.
He's also kind of, like, made for that role.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't imagine a different actor in it. Like,
maybe Dave Chappelle off that particular list?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was thinking Will Smith, But I feel like if it's Will Smith, it would have needed to be a more, like, it almost would have needed to be more Bad Boys, like, more
yeah,
serious.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I did also read that originally, this movie was planned to be Martin Lawrence and Chris Farley.
I read that, yeah. That's...
And it's just like, okay, so would this have been Chris Farley from Beverly Hills Ninja? Would they have leaned into the Asian side of it? I know that's not what they were going for, but it's still a fun thought to have.
Yeah.
But Carter is there because he has a meeting with Clive, who is played by Chris Penn, who is in Reservoir Dogs and True Romance. And in this parking lot, he's there to buy some C4. And I know it hasn't even been revealed to the audience yet that he's a cop, but how is Carter not just a walking red flag to Clive? Like, he's definitely far from being cop-like, but he's also not, like, acting like someone shady either.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like... He's too clean to be like, if you're dealing with like drugs and that kind of stuff. But if you're dealing with explosives, like, you might also expect another person who's very like, who's would actually be cleaner, like,
yeah,
a suit, very official looking. I'm thinking of like Clive looks like he's got like a suit. He's dressed well.
Yeah.
And then you have this kind of like leather jacket. Like he looks like a cop, I feel like, in LA. Mm-hmm. Not someone who's dealing in arms.
Yeah. Well, it's at this point, though, that when he's looking at the C4, that some uniformed officers show up to make this a problem. I do enjoy the moment here where, like, Carter is trying to talk to them with his eyes. Like, no, guys, there's not a problem here. But Clive starts driving away, and so Carter chases after him and shoots at his car and blows it up because the trunk is full of C4.
I don't really understand what Clive was thinking just shooting at the cops. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really seem like a Clive type move. I mean, like, he seems like kind of a nicer, more unassuming guy. He doesn't seem like the type of guy who's just going to open fire.
Well, he had his gun out from the very beginning of the scene. Like, as soon as Carter walks up, he's going like, hey, put your gun away. You don't need that. Like, what are you doing with that? Come on. And he does have his gun out the whole time that they're dealing.
That's true.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
I didn't notice. I just noticed when he's like behind Carter's back and he pulls it out and is like looking at it.
Yeah.
So we cut to Consul Han's house. And if the house looks familiar, it's because the exteriors were used as Wayne Manor in the original 1960s Batman series.
Oh, wow.
Consul Han is getting ready to take his daughter Sue Young to school, but the consul takes a call supposedly from China, but no one is there on the other end of the line. But it's just enough of a distraction so that he doesn't accompany his daughter to school. What exactly does a consul do?
They're like a diplomat, no?
Yeah. I think so, but I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
They just deal with, like, inter-country relationships, something?
Yeah, this isn't where someone would go for immunity, is it, to this guy?
Like, the consulate. That does sound familiar, yeah.
So he's the guy in charge of a consulate, then?
I'd assume so, yeah. The consul of the consulate. That makes sense, logically.
Okay.
Here, let me go to the old Google machine.
No need, we figured it out.
What what is a consul?
Consul is a thing you play video games on.
top answer is, what is a consultant?
Oh.
Maybe consul is just an outdated term for diplomat.
Maybe.
I feel like rather than going, you'd go to the embassy, not the consulate, but are those the same thing?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. An official appointed by a government to live in a foreign city and protect and promote the government's citizens and interests there.
Oh.
So I think what Chris was saying is kind of, that seems right.
Oh, but I think it's more localized for like a city-state. For example, Hong Kong, since it's run by a separate system from China, it technically does govern itself and like does foreign business with other people by itself. It is technically a separate system, so that might be like a diplomat for a city-state kind of deal.
Yeah, the Wikipedia synopsis says, a consul is an official representative of the government of one state in the territory of another, normally acting to assist and protect the citizens of the consul's own country and to facilitate trade and friendship between the people of the two countries.
Okay.
Is he a consul from China? For
it seems almost like a combination of like a diplomat and an ambassador. you're there to like promote the country, but also like do the government, the shady government dealings and all that
stuff.
From what that
description is telling me, it sounds like he's from China doing business with Hong Kong. Like he's trying to improve relations between China and Hong Kong.
But then why is he in the States?
Yeah.
Yeah, because his title is the Chinese consul. Like, so he's there, he's in the States on behalf of China. Maybe it's because the handover is taking place.
We know why he's specifically in L.A. because they're doing a art show with the recovered ancient artifact, which is really weird, and I wanted to bring this up when we talked about it, but this is perfect time. Jackie Chan busts an operation where they find ancient Chinese artifacts, and then immediately they pack it up on this boat and ship it right to fucking L.A. and do an art show,
yeah.
I guess. And then they send the Chinese consul to head the event, and they send him there months earlier to watch it as it gets set up. And in the time that it's getting set up, his daughter is kidnapped.
Yeah.
That is very, like...
So he's an ambassador from China. He's a diplomat. We've figured that out. But they sent him to an art exhibition for stolen art rather than sending the art to an art exhibition in China or a museum.
You would think if the art had been stolen and it was like
they would have returned it to China.
Yeah, yeah, tons of Chinese history that maybe, I don't know, they might also want to take some time and like itemize it and really like figure out where this stuff come from. Like this art had been previously stolen from a museum, so it was already cataloged.
But
it still doesn't make sense. You're right. Like, why would you not share it with your own people?
It's a shaky premise.
And instead be like, oh, yeah, you know what? This will really buy us some favor with the Americans.
At least start your art tour in China for your ancient Chinese whatever artifacts. Like, don't just immediately ship it to LA with a diplomat and just be like, hey, we found this. None of our people have seen it in 1,000 years, but here you go, America. Check it out.
That's like if you won the Stanley Cup and decided to have your parade and like a if the Oilers city. Won the Stanley Cup and decided, you know what? We want to have an Alberta parade and we're gonna start in Calgary or Lethbridge. We'll get to you, Edmonton. We'll end there, but
yeah, victory lap in Edmonton, but
it's like doing it's like an Olympic torch run. Yeah. So now we're driving Soo Young to school. I love the stony looks on the driver's and the other guy's face while Soo Young just absolutely belts out Mariah Carey.
Fantasy by Mariah Carey, fantastic song.
But
yeah, very, very hot on TikTok right now.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Is that one on? Yeah. Okay.
I put that in the tags for this episode. Hell yeah, we got him.
Also, is it like I've been playing, because it's basically like the clip is like as short as what you see in the movie, but yeah, there's a whole dance to go with it and everything. My daughter really, really loves
and
the practiced song.
You practice this so you guys can release it.
I've never tried it, but yeah, I feel like I've seen it enough times that I could do it.
This is one of three jokes in the movie that are just songs that people sing to, and I love that. They're the three of the best jokes in the movies. It's just people singing along to songs.
What's the third one? I know War is the next one.
War is the next one, and I counted the Beach Boys song Surfing USA as well, because it's really funny when Jackie Chan first turns on the radio and goes, Beach Boys.
Yeah. But yeah, the limo that she's riding in gets sent down an off-ramp that, you know, they never question why this one car was singled out, but like Admiral Akbar would say, it's a trap! And so, nice. Is there a problem, officer? No problem. Just rush hour.
Dun, dun, dun.
He said it.
You know, I'm glad he said it, honestly, because I was thinking about it right as this scene was playing, which is almost perfect. I came to the realization, I was like, I have no fucking clue why this movie's called Rush Hour.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason it's called Rush. It has nothing to do with Rush Hour.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's no reason for that title. That title makes no sense except for the one tagline.
Yeah, I mean, they're
the
rushing around.
I think there's
they've got deadlines, so that's your hour. But yeah, you're right. It's,
I think
it's
there's
a
very line about
a connection I'm making.
I think there's a line about rush hour being bad or something like that during the movie.
Maybe.
But it's just It's the weirdest title. And then it feels like this line was like 80 yard in after kind of thing. They were like, oh shit, we gotta rush hour. Some intern came up with that and that's good. We don't know why it's good, but and so they quickly grab that one actor and they're like, all right, just put a cop outfit on and we'll just film you on the street outside the office.
And I'm pretty sure Sang wasn't expecting this little girl to put up that much of a fight.
Yeah.
But I mean, he says, work on your eye gouges. She gets him with her necklace.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, too, I've wrote down here twice in my notes, actually, that Soo Young is a badass. And mm-hmm. if you're ever teaching, like, if you ever want your kids to know how to prevent a kidnapping, you show them this, like, 2-minute scene in Rush Hour. Like, she fights her little heart out, dude, and almost gets away. Credit to her.
Yeah. Yeah, if it wasn't for the backup on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
See, the bad guys have backup that's nearby.
That's also something I've always loved about this movie, is that they have this intricate plan where they have an Asian police officer stand at the top of the road and send the one car down the side road to another Asian police officer who says, hey, rush hour. And then he grabs the girl, gives her to a dude on a motorbike who drives her literally a block away and puts her in a van. Like, it's the most drawn out and unnecessary way to kidnap somebody. Like, what was the point of the motor? Was the motorcycle guy just in case?
I feel like he must have been just in case.
He's,
I mean,
just in case Asian Pharrell got, like, totally beaten up by... totally beaten up by...
Oh, wow. Asian Cisco? That would be the other one? That would be the one for us older people, would be Asian Cisco. So FBI comes looking for Consul Han to let her know that his daughter has been kidnapped. I would like one of my own people to help, he tells them. I am not an American. My daughter is not an American. But let this be a lesson to you. If you ever find yourself in a movie, don't swear to your daughter that you'll pick her up after school, because, you know, that kind of shit never goes well. It's just like the horror trope they mock and Scream, where it's like, I'll be right back, and that's when the guy gets his throat cut. You know, that's, yeah, don't ever make that kind of heartfelt promise to your daughter.
Never make promises in your life, people. You're just asking to be kidnapped.
That's right. That's another point for me to insert the more you know sound.
Exactly. The second you make a promise to your children, you're instantly inserting yourself into an action movie plot, and it's your own damn fault, and you should feel that way.
So we switch scenes to Carter at the precinct bragging, and makes it very clear that he has no need for a partner, foreshadowing much, and we meet the bomb squad technician Johnson, who is played by Elizabeth Pena, who is in La Bamba, Batteries Not Included, Blue Steel, Gridlocked, more Tupac Shakur, and Free Willy 2, The Adventure Home. And she was the voice of Mirage in The Incredibles. I can't remember which one is Mirage, though.
Mirage is the girl with white hair that invites Mr. Incredible to that island.
Oh, the bad guy. Okay.
Well,
okay.
No. Oh, she's kind of a puppet of the system or whatever, because
yeah,
when she gets beat up,
bad guy's
up,
personal
she's...
assistant.
Yeah.
But she is upset because Carter needed bomb squad backup, and she tells him, actually, you're on the verge of being suspended. Have a nice day. And I love the whole, with Chris Tucker here, with the Johnson. Someone told you I was getting suspended? Quit playing, girl. Am I getting suspended?
I like the hesitancy there.
Yeah.
To go full Chris Tucker voice.
Yeah, I know.
It's like,
yeah,
doing an Eddie Murphy impression. It's just, it's kind of forte, so respect.
I just quoted it.
I find the relationship between those two very... I don't know, undefined.
Yeah.
It's too undefined for my liking.
Yeah, it's kind of romantic. There's a bit of, like,
there's some
combativeness
real
there.
Love-hate chemistry going on, yeah.
I feel like they were partners beforehand.
Well,
something happened between...
Oh, well, maybe she moved on to Bomb Squad.
Ah. Don't need a partner in the Bomb Squad. What are they going to do, just get blown up with you?
That's right. You're doubling the casualties. So, well, the FBI, meanwhile, decides that with this new request from the consul, they'll just get a rookie to babysit the consul's man when he arrives. But instead of getting a rookie, if they're going to humiliate anyone, they might as well humiliate the LAPD. You know, I don't understand in movies why there is, like, is there legitimately this much hate between local police forces and FBI? Like, that is, like, the biggest movie trope when it comes to cop movies.
Well, yeah, you think of all of the cop shows and movies and stuff like that. I feel like, you know, jurisdiction and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and like, just there's a certain camaraderie with your department versus another. Like, I feel like other cop departments don't like each other either. Like, it's a
like
trope
on side and narcotics.
Yeah, well, it's a trope on Brooklyn Nine-Nine that other precincts are like competing against each other, you know? So I feel like it's just it's one of those things.
I just want to know though, if it's something in real life, you know?
Yeah. I know that like a cop firefighter beef is real real life.
Yeah, called hose jockeys by the cops.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it had like, even though it's kind of become a trope now, it probably started in some grain of reality.
Well, just with the jurisdiction example, I could imagine if you're working on a case or something and you're close to it, and then all of a sudden an FBI agent swoops in and go, "Actually, we have jurisdiction over this case." And they just take it from you, and you're like, "Ah, damn, what? Why?
Yeah.
Like, I could imagine that would start some rivalries.
Yeah.
Well, the FBI puts in a call to Captain DL at the LAPD, who is played by Philip Baker Hall, who has 184 credits. He was in Rush Hour 3, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, just some of them. And he thinks it's an insulting request until he sees Carter about to enter his office and says, "Well, I'm sending someone right over." And I love this scene between Carter and the captain so much. I think we need to make this. And I used to like this One Piece theater.
Ooh.
So, Colin, last time Chris was on the show, you surprised Chris. I did discuss this with Chris this morning, or earlier today. And he said, "You know what? You and Colin do this one."
All right.
So...
it just makes more sense, you know. I'd want to do the Chris Tucker part, but, you know, that gets a little risque. And then I feel like the captain part is just more suited towards you just because of the age difference. I don't know. It's just I don't really have much of a captain's voice.
Yeah, I'm already calling dibs out on Carter. I watched the show The Neighborhood, and I know the term black voice came up in an episode recently, and I didn't even really know that black voice was a thing.
Well, it's like, the Eddie Murphy impression.
Exactly.
Stuff like
that. I mean, so I'm definitely not going to be the one that does that. So we'll get you to embrace your inner Chris Tucker here, Colin.
I'm just glad you didn't choose a scene between Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was really interested on how you were going to do your intro this week. I was like, is he going to call himself the Lee to his Carter? Because he definitely wouldn't call himself the Carter to his Lee. But it'd be also weird to take the Lee position. But, you know, it is the obvious choice because I was thinking about it and I don't think there is another choice.
Well, I considered introducing you as the Johnson to our Carter Lee.
That's the other thing, too. That's the other thing, too. I was like, how is he going to introduce me? Because the only child character in this show is
Soo Young.
Am I going to be the Soo Young to his Consul Han?
Okay. So anyway, you've got your script there, Colin.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out this voice. I don't have a high pitched. I need a high pitched whiny voice. I'll do my best, Michael Jackson.
You just gotta do. Can't you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth once?
That's right. Say that word
once.
Do you understand
the words that are coming?
There you go.
All right, we'll try this.
Captain, I know you read the paper, but they're lying. I wouldn't do anything like that. They just want a story.
Two officers were shot. One man lost a pinky.
Nobody died.
You destroyed half the block.
That block was messed up.
You lost lots of evidence.
We got a little left.
What you did was dangerous and completely against policy. And not only that, you did a good job.
What now?
Everyone around here is so image conscious, so afraid of their own goddamn shadow. It's nice to meet a detective who's willing to lay it on the line.
Captain, that's the same way I feel. And we have to let the general public know
that we can still blow shit up.
That's the only way I work. So, that mean I ain't getting suspended?
Are you kidding?
Don't know why I said that.
I just got a call from the FBI. The 11-year-old daughter of a Chinese diplomat was kidnapped this morning, and they want you on the case.
FBI want me?
That's right.
Stop lying!
I don't lie.
Tell the truth.
I'm telling the truth.
Thank you, Captain.
Congratulations, Carter. You are going to the show.
I'll look out for you when I reach the top. I'll make you mayor.
I'd rather you didn't.
Hey, listen up. If anybody need me, I'm going to be working a big, big case for the FBI.
Yes!
And
I used to like this One Piece theater. Uh, outstanding.
That was great.
And now you need to, like, gargle. So if you don't hear Colin talking much for the rest of the episode, that one sounded painful from how well I know you.
it's all about the head movement.
It is like a very, you got to be very physical.
Yeah, it's
sure.
A dance. Doing Carter is a dance, right?
Well, you know that scene where he shoots the C4 and then does his little kick dance?
Oh my God, that's like an incredible kick, right?
There's a time where I attempted that kick. I've done it multiple times, but one time I was a little overzealous with it and I had to sit down for the rest of the movie.
Oh, okay. Well, I was wondering whether you were going to say you, like, kicked yourself in the head or so.
No, I just kicked my leg out of its effing socket kind of deal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I really wanted to just emulate it to the nth degree, and yeah.
So Carter is proud of himself because he's now working for the FBI, as we just heard. I like how he comes in, though, to the consul's house and starts trying to take control of the scene.
Give me one of those earpieces.
Yeah, one of those earpieces stat. Yeah, he takes the pad of paper out of the one guy's hand. But he finds out that he's got a G-14 classified mission.
One thing I wanted to bring up. In the scene previous, the captain lies to Carter about the importance of the case he's being reassigned to.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically because he knows Carter's character and he knows that he's going to walk out and make an ass of himself,
mm-hmm,
just so that later he can tell all of the cops that it's not actually a big deal and that they can make fun of him. So that totally makes sense why he would lie to Carter.
Yeah.
In this one, I don't understand why the FBI agent, who's on a very, very prioritized mission, feels the need to take Carter away from the group to be like, it's G-14 classified. Let me walk with you on this mission. It could just be as easy as, hey, we need you to babysit this Chinese guy that's coming. Thank you.
If you don't
want to
do it, you're not FBI.
Exactly. He goes on like a 5-minute walk with him and then just walks off after just like humiliating him for a little bit, I guess. Like he never met this guy. If he has a mission of utmost importance, like it just seems stupid of him to go on a 5-minute walk really quick to be like, oh, G-14 classified, you're a big deal here, we need you to babysit this dude.
Well, yes, that is his assignment. His assignment is Lee, and he just doesn't want to see him or you until this thing is resolved, he says. And, you know, every time I watch this movie, I expect these FBI guys to be evil.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about their demeanor. No matter how many times I watch this movie, I'm just like, you know, is this the time that they're going to double cross? Like, as if the movie's going to change every time. I just keep forgetting that they're good. For some reason, I always think that they're going to turn.
There's something weird about secondary cop characters in a movie like that, where it's like another group of partners where there's usually like a tall kind of bumbling one.
Yeah.
And then there's like a shorter, smart witted one.
Johnson & Johnson from Die Hard. I know what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say that those two remind me a lot of those guys.
Well, Inspector Lee arrives on a private plane. And this is the whole scene where we get, do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Classic.
Apparently this line, though, is taken from the real life meeting of Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker, because during their first interaction, I guess Chris Tucker was talking really fast, as he does, and afterwards Jackie Chan said to his assistant, I couldn't understand a single word that was coming out of his mouth. So they actually put that into this movie. We get such classic lines of, bullshit, Mr. Rice-a-roni, don't even speak American. He tells the captain at one point that he's going to drop him off at Panda Express. There's one point where he says, do you want me to get you a cup of noodles? I never really...
A whole lot of playful racism.
Yeah. Like, I just look at this and go, well, okay, 22 years ago, that wasn't as big of a deal, but now it's like I got my eyes open and it's like, oh, Carter is straight up racist.
It's like every second joke you say has something to do about Lee being Asian. Like, maybe you should bump up your material.
Yeah, yeah. Like he calls the other guy sweet and sour pork at one point. Or...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get to it in the reviews later on, but it was actually kind of funny reading through a lot of the reviews for this movie, how many people talk about that, like the racism and also just like the caricature of a black man that Chris Tucker is playing. And it was just like, so things that I had never even considered before or thought of.
Yeah, but it's like with 22 years of hindsight or whatever, it's like, oh yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other thing that's changed in 22 years is we see Carter talking on a handheld cell phone.
Whoa.
Oh, 1998.
The future is now. Handheld cell phones, dude? No way. Like Captain Kirk?
But he's talking to the chief to try to get reassigned, because there must have been some sort of mistake, but back at the precinct, we see that everyone is in on the joke.
And you can count out the mayor position. I like that one, too.
So, to add to Carter's racism, he's taking him to Grauman's Chinese Theater, telling him that it must remind him of home. And then Carter goes to see his informant in front of the Chinese Theater. Give me one of them star maps for $45, if you know what I'm saying. Well, he's trying to get information from the informant, but he loses Lee at this time, and then catches up to him on the bus. I never realized until this viewing just how much action that Chris Tucker actually has in this movie.
You know, I was looking for stunt doubles and stuff like that. Yeah, he's in a lot of it. Like that scene where they fall down the stairs in the restaurant, that's totally him. Like they don't cut or anything like that, yeah.
Yeah, and like just the running and jumping onto the back of the bus. Like, yeah, some of it might be stunt doubles, but it just, I always thought of Jackie Chan was the action guy. And I mean, he overshadows everything when it comes to action. And I thought that he was the mouth guy. And it's like, oh, no, you know what? They actually give Carter some good action moments in this movie. And this is one of them, chasing him down on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's played up a little bit more in the second movie. But it's weird. And like, I would say in Rush Hour, Carter seems like a semi-competent fighter.
Yeah,
but it's either in the it must be the second one because they're actually in Hong Kong and there's more martial arts. But it's like he's so out of his depth and he seems so sloppy in that movie. And it was interesting.
The most famous scene from the third one is him getting his ass beat by those kung fu people or whatever. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I do agree with you, Sean. It was I didn't realize until I watched it this go around how, you know, Carter does actually do a lot of the lifting. He's not just the mouthpiece.
Yeah. Oh, and here's another one of those action moments, too, is that, yeah, he ends up jumping on the motorcycle and taking off after Jackie Chan as well.
Yeah.
And then he gets to the top of this open roof bus. I love the, it's okay, go ahead, I'm FBI, take a picture, and starts posing for them. But then Jackie Chan does some Jackie Chan stuff to get away by hanging from the sign and then jumping down onto the thing and rolling into the back window of a cab.
It's just crazy how much Jackie Chan does with his, like, set pieces in the movie. Like, the scene in the bar, like, the amount of stuff they do just on a pool table kind of deal, like, it's just, like, they really took took time to look at that pool table and were like, what is everything we could do here really quickly?
Yeah.
Like, I just love action scenes with him because he uses the scenes to the full potential and they're just so much fun to watch.
Yeah. But he manages to get Lee out of the cab, and then we've got this whole, like, Mexican standoff between him and the cabbie and Lee, and they've all got guns on each other, and, no, it's okay, I'm FBI. And then this is the, I'm a policeman. I was just showing him how to take the gun from a suspect. Oh, shit, he speaks English. Just because he chose not to doesn't mean he can't. You just assume that I can't.
I love that they cap that scene with a gong.
Yeah. Yeah, so... So I guess Carter's not the only one that was racist. You know, yes, we've got the white director directing a black man and an Asian man. So, like, it seems like, yeah, the white director might not have made all of the most sensitive choices in this movie. Yeah.
Do they play the da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na at any point?
Oh, I don't know whether they do.
I feel like during the restaurant scenes.
They might have,
or
yeah.
The boat scenes at the very beginning.
Oh.
Yeah, that would be a perfect way to start those. Yeah. Just so we know we're in China.
Start playing the Siamese cat song from Lady and the Tramp. But yeah, they're taking off to do some more police work. Lee wants them to go to the consul's house, but Carter has other plans. And just like Martin Lawrence and Bad Boys, Chris Tucker's pretend driving is so bad. But this is the part where it's, ooh, Beach Boys, don't you ever touch a black man's stereo. And, okay, so, you know, also in Bad Boys, we talked about the rich black cop. What is Carter's story? Because you thought it was such an interesting thing for them to do for Will Smith's character in Bad Boys. But he's well-dressed, super fancy classic car, nice watch. Do they pay that well in the LAPD?
Well, he's also really, really upset when he gets his suit dirty because that makes me feel like he implies like he doesn't have many other suits. Because he gets really upset. He's like, damn, I got my suit dirty.
Oh, so he's just playing money.
Maybe, yeah. He got himself a nice watch and one suit. And I think he bust out the suit specifically because he was working FBI. So he got his one suit out and he went, shit, got my one suit dirty. There's like a line in the movie that says that.
Yeah, okay. I mean, they don't really go into his backstory, either of their backstories really all that much. So it's hard to know.
Yeah, like at least we know in Bad Boys that Lowry was a trust fund kid.
Yeah.
So, but Lee is annoyed because he's still trying to get to the consulate. Instead, they pull up to the pool hall. And what are we doing here? Well, it's called a shakedown. And then we've got the whole scene that, you know, with the, is this weed? You'd better have a prescription. This isn't a cigarette, it's cig-a-weed. But I love how he takes the burning joint and puts the lit roach in his pocket.
I love his face when he's like,
I like also sweet. Just how much of a deal he makes about it, because later in the movie there's a part where he tries to bust one of the other cops. He's like, remember that dime bag of weed I caught you by? And he's like, I bought that to share with you. Like, obviously Carter smokes weed, so he's obviously just posturing for Lee, but it's just funny that he makes such a big deal about it.
Yeah, this is his shit. I haven't been able to get a hookup for a little while because I'm a cop.
I'm gonna steal this roach and smoke it as soon as I'm away from Lee.
But yes, then we also get a couple opportunities for Carter to say, what's up, my N-word?
Planting that seed.
Just planting that seed, yeah, in Lee's head. And then he gets into the back room where there's some sort of illegal poker game going on or something, and starts roughing up the guy with, where's the girl? What girl? The little Chinese girl. There's a lot of red outfits in this back room.
Yeah. Though.
Everyone is wearing red. Like, is this a gang thing? Are they all part of a gang? Because, like, they're not good guys.
I didn't even think about the gang aspect. Yeah. That could be a possibility, yeah.
They could be Bloods.
Yeah. Is that the red ones? Okay.
That makes sense, right? Yeah.
Crips are blue.
Okay.
Could you imagine if the Bloods had, like, green as their colors?
Yeah.
Be very, very weird.
That's true. Just like Deadpool says, he wears red so that the bleeding doesn't show.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah.
So in this moment, Carter chucks Lee out, and then we find out that this guy that he's talking to is his cousin. The only reason I haven't busted you is because you're my cousin, and it would kill Aunt Bootsy. Aunt Bootsy! He asks his cousin about explosives. Is he working two cases at the same time? Because Carter actually seems like he legitimately wants to get the little girl back. Like, he wants to go against the FBI, but he's there investigating the explosives.
Well, no, he got the explosives tips when he asked about the girl, no?
Well, I'm not sure.
Like, he asked the Star Maps guy about, like, a kidnapping or something, or about information.
So
he was going to solve the case before the FBI could.
So these two cases just run together conveniently.
I guess so. Maybe just C4 was in high demand, so this one shady guy he was shaking down happened to have C4 at the time.
Hmm.
I don't know. I didn't write the fucking movie.
I mean, like, Jun Tao is, like, a criminal organization, so they could be involved in both, like, it could just be coincidence that they're also involved in, you know, selling the C4 and all the stuff that they're doing with the Consul Han. I don't know. This is kind of a stretch.
Jun Tao is also the organization then? Like, or, like, is that the name of the head of the organization? Or is it both?
Well, no, the guy says Jun Tao is everywhere, right?
Well, so yeah, but I think that's a misdirection, isn't it?
Well, he could be telling the truth if it's just an organization. Jun Tao is everywhere. It's the secret government organization that operates behind the scenes that you don't know about.
This movie has more holes than I thought.
This movie is well thought out, thank you very much. It has a rich lore.
I think that Jun Tao is, like, the organization.
That would make sense. I never thought about it that way.
As we'll come to realize, the head of Jun Tao is a white British man, so I don't think his name is Jun Tao.
Mm-hmm.
But he could be the head of Jun Tao.
Maybe it means, like, white devil in Mandarin or something.
Yeah, it could be one of those monikers that are given.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the dawn. Jun Tao is Chinese for dawn. I don't know. Okay. Either way. Meanwhile, while Carter's in the back with his cousin, we get a whole bar fight starting because of a racial slur. Because Lee doesn't know what words he shouldn't be using in a room full of black men. And I have to say that although I love Jackie Chan's stunt work, I always find his reactions when he's like quote unquote losing a little melodramatic. Like there's just, I don't know, is it just me? Is that
no, I think that's like part of his style, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's hard to take as seriously as someone like Jet Li, who usually, you know, he has these straight fight scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But Jackie Chan's are always just wacky, but he gets, like, these bugged out looks on his face. And
Jackie Chan's whole shtick is that he, like, finds the comedy in the stunt work kind of thing. Like, he is much more of a comedic fighter than he is a serious fighter. Like, if you go through most of his movies, most of them are comedy movies. Like,
it's true.
Drunken Master, hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jackie Chan's style in movies to me, it reminds me more of, like, professional wrestling, like it's exaggerated.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. He also
for,
he has
like
a
effect.
That's probably the best thing to compare it to.
He grew up in Chinese theater. He is a theater person foremost. Yeah.
Yeah.
The theater he specializes in, I believe, is like it's almost like an acrobatics theater type deal. And yeah, they just moved that into stunt work and started their own stunt agency and started doing like Hong Kong movies kind of deal.
Cirque du Soleil : China edition.
Basically, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost more, it reminds me of like dance almost, like how it's supposed to, or even like musical theater. It's very exaggerated and, you know, even the facial expressions have to be like so exaggerated and that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, the movies.
Here come the Jets and the Sharks.
Yeah. The movies that I've seen with Jet Li, it's a lot more about the martial arts, I think, and it's like it's they're usually more serious, I guess, more like just action oriented and less about like the comedy and the theatrics.
Yeah. You know, Jackie Chan looks like a theater actor when he's acting. That's for sure.
That's true. Yeah,
yeah. Very exaggerated facial expressions, very exaggerated movement.
I think it's. I often wonder if it has to also do with his accent, because I know when he speaks. Like, when he's speaking clear English, even when he's, like, very enunciative, if that's a word. Like
his face is moving, all of it, yeah.
So that might also have something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. So now that Li has kind of kicked everyone's ass in the bar, he goes back in the back and finds Carter just wrapping up his conversation with his cousin. But he's found out that some badass dude down in Chinatown is buying up all the explosives.
I did also want to say that during the fight scene, Jackie scratched the 8, so he lost. He just lost that game. I'm sorry.
If you're allowed to play pool with your fist, though, because he punches that ball into the hole. But
still scratch that 8. Still so scratch he loses. That 8. He loses. I'm sorry. House rules.
But Li and Carter get out of there, and this is the point where Carter ends up handcuffing Li to the steering wheel while he's in the store. But yeah, he comes out and finds out that his steering wheel is missing, and Li has taken a taxi to the consul's house. Okay, so when he gets to the consul's house, why does he disarm the FBI guys instead of just explaining? Like, I'm sure, like, it's just to get another Jackie Chan action scene in here.
I was going to say we needed an excuse to have him jump around a little bit more.
Yeah, but as soon as Consul Han saw him, he would have known who it was. Like, this whole panic scene room is just, it's unnecessary.
Well, the FBI is also trying to hide the fact that they went against the Chinese consul's wishes and just, like, gave his specialized cop to a different dude and just told them to F off kind of deal.
Yeah.
They're also acting like there's no other Asian people in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
At that other than the consul and his family.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the most Asian populated cities in America, if I had to pick one.
Maybe San Francisco would
maybe
be
San Francisco.
Anything on the West Coast.
Exactly, yeah.
And so any Asian person who comes to their door must be affiliated with Juntao.
I guess so.
Well, also just at the Chinese theater, half of the people there were Chinese.
Oh, at the top of the bus, everyone was.
Exactly, yes. So there's obviously plenty of Chinese people. But, you know, cops, they like to profile. Am I right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Say the two white guys. But, I mean, even in 1998, there'd be cameras at the gate. Like, all he'd have to
is... there's a scene where he jumps up on the wall and looks at the
camera
and turns it away from him.
Yeah, like, all he'd have to say is, yo, I'm Inspector Li, the consul sent for me, he can identify me, I'll wait.
Yeah.
But instead he does all this stuff where he's, like, disarming FBI guys.
Because it's so much cooler.
It is. It definitely is. Especially the bit where he, like, disarms the one guy of his gun and then, like, one-handed because he's holding the steering wheel in the other hand. Yeah, he disassembles the guy's gun.
Like a freaking transformer.
Yeah, or the part where he, like, kicks the one guy's gun out of the holster and catches it. Oh, yeah.
But it's also, it's one of those scenes where it's like, you have to show how honorable Jackie Chan is, because not only was he so sorry about being late, but he went above and beyond to make sure that he got there even quicker. He didn't wait for them to go get the Chinese console. He ran there himself.
Okay.
So,
sure.
You know, he's just trying to go above and beyond, get that promotion, secure that bag.
So Carter shows up in the tow truck. Now it's gotten messy because the console was never supposed to know about him. And then he accidentally answers the phone, and it's the ransom demands. And we get the $50 million. Who do you think you have, Chelsea Clinton?
Which the outtakes from that are incredible.
Oh, I can't believe how many times he had to say that line. It wasn't that hard to say Chelsea Clinton.
Well, it was also the 90s. I'm sure everybody knew Chelsea Clinton's name.
Yep.
Yeah.
You think so?
My favorite one by far is when he's like, he's like, who do you think you are, Chelsea Grammer?
Yeah, Chelsea Grammer.
Chelsea Grammer. Chelsea Grammer was a good one, that's for sure. So the FBI gets a trace on the call, sends units to the location. Lee and Carter show up, and Lee is busy telling them, you must pull your men back. If you were asking for $50 million, would you be in a place like that?
Which, that logic makes no sense. If movies have taught me anything, is that when you kidnap a person, you bring them to an abandoned building. Yeah. So that fits the bill as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the shadiest place you can think of. Yeah, the exactly. Last place they would look. Yeah.
The weird thing is why the bad guy hung around afterwards. You know, maybe 90s technology, you have to stick around to blow it up. But then he walks out onto the most populated street and gets immediately seen.
Oh, I guess he gets off on watching it blow up.
Yeah, he's a sociopath. That's right. He's totally into the whole experience.
Yeah, because at this point, fucking boom! And we get the foot chase. I mean, there's something comedic about Jackie Chan's running style, too. But it's a pretty exciting foot chase, and they chase him through a building, and we get some fight scenes. And then they chase him up to, like, this bridge. It's, I don't know, is it a construction bridge or something?
Yeah.
But he and Carter end up falling through this bridge, which is, like, 2 or 3 stories up. They'd be fucking dead.
Yeah, no, they fall, like, 40 fucking feet. Like, that was a far drop.
Like, at least they limp away, but they aren't limping in the next scene.
But they're dirty. They're covered in that dust from that scene for the rest of the movie.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, he ruined his suit.
Exactly.
But in the chase, he recovered a detonator, so they go to Johnson for help. She lets them know that it's something that could be used for C4.
Wait, like the bomb at the beginning of the movie?
Like the explosives that they've been looking for throughout the movie.
No fucking way.
Yeah.
No way.
So this clue takes them to their explosives expert. So they go to see Clive after hours at the jail. And, of course, we get such classic lines of, you know, Clive saying, you can kiss my ass, and Clive, it would take me all day to kiss your fat ass.
All day.
But then Lee pulls out the secret weapon, the picture of the little girl, to get the information about Jun Tao.
Breaks your heart.
Breaks your heart, yeah. I don't care about him. I don't care about you. I want the girl.
Excellent performance by Jackie Chan.
That's
excellent.
Right.
Totally.
A tour de force, whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
So they go to stake out Chinatown, and then this is the whole, I don't know, this is almost a montage of sorts where we get the war, what is it good for, and trying to teach Lee how to say y'all, and the dance-off that turns into karate moves, and the gun disarming lesson, all the stuff that that Colin was talking about practicing when he was younger.
Yeah.
So when you did this as a kid, when you were practicing taking guns from your friends, mm-hmm. Is it really as hard as Carter makes it look? Because I've never tried this particular whatever, you know, method he has going on. But was it really that hard to get it pointing the right way, for example? Like there's the one point he takes it and it's still pointing at himself. it's like a Daffy Duck cartoon there, you know?
Yeah, no. It should be harder to get it so that you're pointing the gun at yourself, I think. Because it's really just a grab and twist.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks that way in that scene.
But yeah, Carter makes it look really tough. So we find out at the consul's house that the drop is going to happen behind the Fu Chao restaurant, which just happens to be where Carter and Lee are. This is going to get messy. And they decide to get some food while they're waiting, and we've got the one guy with the line, Chinese food, no soul food. So, but yeah, this is where he orders the camel's hump. Is camel's hump actually a thing?
No, it's just Lee messing with him, for sure, yeah.
Like, aren't camel humps mostly water anyway? Would there actually be anything that you could eat out of a camel's hump?
Well, I know camels are eaten, but no, it's definitely not a thing. It's just him going like, hey, yeah. I'm going to mess with you. Because then Carter goes and orders it in the next fucking scene.
Yeah, well, he goes into there and says, how's your camel hump? And she says, oh, good. Like, they actually have it in the restaurant.
I'm sure, again, it's just them messing with him. Like, it has to be one of those. There's no way. It's just, it's probably her going like, yeah, we have that. And then she just charges him the most expensive dish on the menu. Because it's written in Chinese, and what's he going to do?
I just love the way that Jackie Chan says it, but I'm looking at an article here that says camel hump, the ultimate delicacy.
Really? Well, that doesn't seem like something that would be easy to find, though, on the street in Chinatown in Los Angeles.
Yeah, this is interesting. It says, someone asks, can you eat a camel's hump? And the top answer says, it's a CNN article that says, camel meat is prized in the Middle East, with the best part famously being the hump. So you can eat the hump.
There's another more you know bit to add.
We've learned a lot this episode.
That's right.
lots of people referring to it as a delicacy.
Okay.
For some reason, I just assumed the hump was like a structural.
Well, but it's sag. Like it's where they store their water because it sags when they're dehydrated. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's why I said I thought it would be mostly water.
Makes sense.
Okay.
But we're mostly water too, so that can mean anything.
That's true.
Yeah.
Good point.
Like, I guess it's just a pouch kind of thing, or like a weird meat sponge.
Exactly. I bet you it's a meat sponge kind of deal. And just the more filled with water it is, the fatter.
I want the word meat sponge to enter like the regular vocabulary. Oh, I'm gonna use meat sponge at some point in my life, I'm sure now. So they make this plan to go into the restaurant. I love the moment where Carter lends Lee his ID with the goofy picture.
My favorite line in the movie. It's what? So funny.
What, this won't work because I'm not 6'1"?
Yeah. It's so good. It's such a perfect like way to just avert your expectations. This won't work. I'm not 6'1".
but apparently, like, it's such a goofy looking picture. Apparently the afro and the mustache and the pic were added in post-production.
All right.
They looked at it and go, oh, it would look even funnier if we had like an outdated picture of Carter on here. But yeah, originally it wasn't like that. But Carter goes into the restaurant pretending to have a meeting with Jun Tao. And then, we discover that Jun Tao is Commander Griffin, or the head of Jun Tao, whichever one we've settled on here. And then Lee comes into the restaurant too, but he sees the necklace he gave Su Young being worn by one of the waitresses, and the music gets like super ominous.
Well, also, who just gave that little girl's necklace to a random Chinese food waitress?
Yeah,
one of the motorcycle guys. That's his girl.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, but that feels a little bit like murdering a woman with a diamond ring and then proposing to someone.
And I bet you whatever's written on it is probably very personal, and I doubt it's like love or anything, because that seems like a semi-professional relationship that those two have.
Mm-hmm. It probably says eye gouges. That's how he knew for sure that it wasn't just some random Chinese necklace. Yeah, it had a very specific word.
Yeah, that's
on
the
it.
Other thing. I doubt he got it personally made, so there must be like a bunch of those random words or random necklaces with that word on it out in the market. Like, it could be anybody's.
Oh, it's like going to Disneyland and buying a license plate that says Sean.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. My Simpsons Bort name tag. So Carter is allowed upstairs and he meets Sang and a bunch of thugs. And this is the part where Carter realizes that he's surrounded. And he says, put the gun down and fight me like a man. And then we get the kick in the face. Which one of y'all kicked me? So, do they put dust on their shoes, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've just noticed that, especially in Jackie Chan movies. To make the kicks look more impactful, it's like they have dust on their shoe, because when he gets kicked in the face, there's a puff of dust.
You know, as far as I'm aware, they put either dust on the limb you're swinging, or they like shake dust into your hair and then actually kind of give you a love tap kind of deal to shake it out.
Okay, so it's not something that's added in post then, okay.
No. Those are like signatures of Hong Kong movies and Kung Fu movies and stuff like that. Yeah, there's always like a puff of smoke. It just adds to the action.
Oh, okay.
Like, what's the guy? Fuck. Gunfights. He's famous for gunfights. What's the guy? John Woo.
Oh, John Woo.
Yeah,
okay.
John Woo. All of his movies.
I didn't know if you were looking at actor or director or what. Yeah,
no,
okay.
John Woo movies. Yeah, John Woo movies have all the dust and stuff whenever there's action. And yeah, just all those types of movies.
Yeah, okay. But we get our exciting fight scene because Lee also shows up in this, and I still love the action. Like,
which, by the way, Lee shows up after finding himself a disguise. Instead of barging into the room and starting the fight, he goes and he knocks out a random waiter and takes his clothes and then joins the fight.
Yeah, well, because he needed to look inconspicuous getting up the stairs.
Right.
So he came up with the tray. So he probably already took out two guards outside the door at this point.
Just leaving a trail of bodies.
Yeah, and then
he's already in his third disguise. We just didn't see him changing to the other one. Just seems a little unnecessary. There's also a scene later in the movie where Carter gets into a random disguise that is completely unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
His at least makes a little bit more sense because he's kind of like suspended from the police force. It's not like he can hold up a plane.
Yeah.
But the whole him getting into a waiter's outfit is just odd.
But yeah, fucking boom. The restaurant blows up. So we get another big building explosion. And Carter and Lee end up running into the FBI. I do love the line, though. Is that my gun? It is my gun. Let's go. But they've just jumped out of, like, another two-story window, and they're still limping for a little while, but not later on as well. Like, it just, they're superhuman.
That's, like, an actual trope of Rush Hour, is they constantly, in every movie, they repeatedly just jump from, like, very large heights and grab onto stuff and fall down.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing in Rush Hour 2, too, now that I think about it, yeah.
Yeah, but at least with Jackie Chan, you realize that, okay, he's probably doing that. Yeah. They have to step Carter up to his level to make sure that...
I don't know if you remember in, like, the third movie, in, like, the final, like, thing when they're in Paris,
is this
super long, like, zip line thing that they fall down to in front of the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in the second one, it's that big fall in the casino through the awnings.
Yeah.
And then in the first one, it's that one from the building. And then later in the movie did they do that for real? Did they like paint out some wires or something like that?
Well,
did he just drop from the roof and slide down the thing? Like, that seems sketchy.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, the funny thing though, I find, you know, now that they bumped into the FBI and they're taken away by the FBI, they could have easily said that they were working an entirely different case.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really, he was following the trail of explosives, which was something that he already has, like, a paper trail that proves that it's something that he was already working on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It also happened to take them to the little girl.
Yeah, the funny thing about that, though, is, like, Lee, we were talking about jurisdiction before, Lee has zero jurisdiction.
Yeah.
It seems odd that you would take somebody who has no law enforcement powers and then throw them into all these crazy situations where they might die, and you're dealing with like international relations.
Well, again, too, I feel like that probably messes with the whole judicial aspect of it. Like, can you call for a mistrial because you're arrested by somebody who has nothing to do with the legal system that represents your country?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's also the question of, like, we just learned what a consul actually is.
Well, kind of.
So, well, sort of, yeah. Still not 100% clear. But there must be some sort of, like, diplomatic immunity that maybe extends to his personal police officer that he's brought over. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, maybe he has some sort of, like, diplomatic signing authority to make him legal in the States. I don't know. Who knows? But after all this, we find out that the ransom goes up to $70 million, so now he's got Hillary Clinton, not Chelsea Clinton. Lee and Carter get thrown off the case.
Well, no, I feel like Hillary Clinton, especially in the 90s, her ransom would have been a little lower, I feel like. Nobody really liked Hillary Clinton. Nobody really likes Hillary Clinton still. She lost to Donald Trump. You know how much people...
Okay, we're not a political show. We're not a political show. Lee and Carter get thrown off the case, and Lee is being sent home to China. And they've been up for like 24 hours at this point.
Yeah, the longest fucking day ever.
Yeah.
Hasn't changed his suit yet. It's been like nighttime forever, like twice maybe.
No, it was only the one really long night. But then Commander Griffin comes to console the consul. And then Carter calls Johnson for some intel about where the consul is going to be tonight. And like actually has like a real moment with her. Like, you know, no, I don't have time for this. I really need some help here. And then asks her what color panties she got on.
It's because they filmed that scene and it was heartfelt. And then Brett Ratner was like, you know what would be really cool? You just asked her what color panties she was wearing.
So Carter goes to the airplane to get Lee. So Lee comes to the country on a private plane, but goes home commercial. Like, they did him dirty.
Shoved him coach middle seat.
Like, it's not his fault that, like, for blowing the case, like, the FBI was holding him off for so long, and but he's disrespected the consul, and so he gets sent home. And, like, later on, we see that he's on commercial as well, but at least there he's getting first class. This, it looks like he's in coach. Like, they're just like, no, you're literally on the next flight home. And they go to the Chinese artifacts event. So Sang is there in disguise. But shouldn't the FBI have intel on what he looks like by now? Like, the FBI really just did not ask any questions of the people that investigated whether they respected them or not. Like, at least it's still a cop. You could be like, hey, the guy that you were chasing, what did he look like? Oh, he's like the only blonde Asian with a scar under his eye in the entire city.
Distinct cut under his eye.
Distinct fresh cut under his eye. Shaped kind of like a little girl's necklace. But it's just like is the FBI so pigheaded that they're like, oh, we don't even want to know what you saw since you were actually there? You ruined our case, but maybe you could tell us something. I don't know. That's just my thought.
Basically.
At the event, Carter recognizes Jun Tao because he saw him on the security camera earlier.
Yeah, on the CRT television from a couple feet away. I'm sure he totally saw that gentleman.
Well, he looked straight at the camera. So.
Oh, yeah. The few pixels that make up his face looked in the general direction of the camera.
So Carter gets everybody out of the building. I need you all to just walk in an orderly fashion towards the door. You hear what I said? Get your shit and get out of the building! So we find out as the villain monologues here, though, that Jun Tao used to own all of the artifacts. He reveals himself in this moment, and they were taken away from him.
Yeah, he said he spent the time cataloging it, so...
Oh, there you go.
So then, in that case, when the police raided his place...
They had a perfect catalog ready to go.
Yeah, okay.
Dated.
Well, I guess they still don't know who Jun Tao is, so they didn't raid his place, but maybe he had, like, a purchase order... Mixed in with the on the boat with all the artifacts.
Proof of purchase, just, yeah, on the crate.
So while the villain is monologuing, Carter sneaks out to go find the little girl in the van with the vest of C4. And I love the scene of him disarming the guard where he takes the gun and he's like, ha! Ah! Didn't know I could do that, did you?
He has to look at the gun to make sure it's facing the right direction before he continues.
And then, I'm not going to kill you. I'm just going to kick your ass. And then I like how he kicks the guy in the stomach and then takes that moment when he's holding the gun, getting ready to pistol whip him. And then his eyes bug out. Like, he gets all crazy eyed just for a second there.
He waits for the guy to look up at him.
And then pistol whips him, yeah.
He wants that personal experience.
Yeah, and then we get the tell your friends. Carter goes to take the vest off Su Yang, and I love how she tells him that she overheard them saying that it would blow if it was taken off, and he's like, okay, it's safer if we just leave the vest on. So instead, Carter drives the van into the building, and I've got your bomb right here, push the button, blow everybody up. And so we've got the little girl catches on to him, and so Su Yang starts, yeah, blow me up.
Yeah, this
blow everybody up.
This is where I've written again that Su Yang is a badass, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, again, going into the future for when Su Yang and Consul Han return in the third movie,
mm-hmm.
one of my biggest problems with the third movie is the creepiness of Carter. Like,
oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Kind of insinuating that he's down to, like, get with Su Yang.
Down for some egg Su Yang.
Yes.
Oh, come on. Like, Carter gets all of them. Why can't I have one? Why can't I have one 90s, sweet and sour pork,
man,
joke?
It's the 90s.
Yeah.
But yeah, Su Yang is a very underrated part of this movie. It's too bad that there wasn't more of her.
A little bit.
I just imagine her being interrogated and, like, back talking to her captors.
Yeah, she's funny during the movie. Yeah. Yeah. Like, every scene she's in, it's great.
Yeah, she's probably there calling them a bunch of pussies and stuff. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, luckily, though, Johnson is there to take the vest off her, but we have seen already that she isn't very confident in her job. It's going to get intense. But then she starts doing her little roses are red, violets are blue speech, which has, like, this kind of horror vibe to it.
Yeah.
Sugar is sweet.
and so are you.
I've written here, if I were a bad guy, I would simply make a bomb with all white wires.
Okay.
How are you going to know which one to cut when they're all white?
How are you going to know which one to plug in where when they're all white?
Yeah. I'll figure it out.
Okay.
There'll be a different indicator.
So she has like a 1 in 4 chance of cutting the right wire. You have a 1 in 4 chance of attaching the right wire. Is that what you're saying? Is that it might work? I might blow you all up.
Well, I'd have like the plans or whatever. I would just simply make it from the start with only white wires.
Okay.
It would make the most sense. Why is there different colored wires on a bomb anyways?
That's exactly what I think, to make sure you're connecting it to the right pieces.
Well, do you need so that different wires for different things?
Something has to go from the detonator to, I don't know. I'm not a bomb expert, but
I'm just saying,
but I
man,
feel like
you get around a lot of things by just making all the wires white.
I don't know. I used to work in car audio sales, and I know how important it was to make sure that you had the ground wire correct. So you don't want to touch that ground wire to the wrong thing and blow yourself.
Those are also
up.
Like audio and visual cord or audio cords and stuff like that. Like it's a bomb. Like it's probably just you're powering what the LCD timer display and the detonator, and then something that charges the bomb. Like it all just has to transport electricity. I doubt it's doing specialized things. I would make a bomb with all white wires. Okay.
Okay.
Then nobody could disarm my bomb, and my evil plan would go off without a hitch. Okay.
Okay.
Or I would wrap the bomb in a box.
You heard it here, folks. And let's cue one more "The More You Know" sound right here. Let's get that jingle in one more time.
As Chris was ranting, his voice was becoming more like, "I'm going to make my bomb with white wires." Okay,
Mr. Bigglesworth would approve.
If I make the bomb with white wires, they won't be able to.
They will not be able to disarm my bomb. So she does manage to get the bomb off, even with the horror vibe and the creepy music that was accompanying it. So Lee takes the bomb over and is hiding behind. There's this whole shootout going on, so he hides next to Carter. And oh no, that ain't the bomb! So I love the added stakes that we add by having this bomb as part of this fight scene. And I did find out that C4 actually wouldn't blow up with a bullet, because
I think
it's actually
a
very stable substance. But still, and then we get the scene or all the fight scenes where Jackie Chan is also trying to save all these valuable artifacts at the same time, which I heard was something that was added in later because an original test screening said that there wasn't enough Jackie Chan action.
Oh, wow.
So one of the ones that they added was this big scene of him fighting while trying to catch the vase at the same time.
That's probably where that scene of him sneaking back into the console came from too.
Oh. In the original script, he showed up and said, "Hey, I'm Lee, let me in."
Yeah, he goes, "Hey, I'm here for the diplomat." And everyone went, that could be a good scene where he jumps over the wall and turns the camera away. Come on, guys, missed opportunity.
But yeah, I do love especially though the big vase scene, because like after he saves it all and then it gets shot anyway and
just
shatters.
Explodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Lee is chasing Jun Tao and his briefcase of cash up to the roof where Jun Tao is heading towards a helicopter. And we also get a fight scene between Carter and Sang, where we get Sang repeating the "put your gun down, fight like a man." What'd you say? Fight like a man.
Fight like a man.
Then we get one of the only lines that I really don't like in this movie after he ends up killing Sang. And I love the fake out where they both drop their guns and they both got backup guns. I thought, you know, I absolutely love that they were both ready for the double cross.
Mm.
But yeah, he says, "Wipe yourself off, man. You dead."
Well, it's a callback.
I know it's a callback, but it's like, it's such a weak line.
I disagree wholeheartedly. That's like my favorite line of the whole movie.
See, I would have gone word for word. I would have gone, "Wipe yourself off. You're bleeding. Oh, you dead." Like, that would be a better way to do it.
True.
Is to, like, call back the entire line. See?
I can get on board with that, but I still love that line.
Yeah.
For
whatever
reason.
Fair enough. So, meanwhile, Lee is chasing Jun Tao up to the top, and he gets pushed over the edge, and he's hanging on, and Jun Tao is trying to beat at his hand with a briefcase full of money, which spills everywhere. And I love the line though from Carter when all the money starts raining down, and
thank
he goes,
God.
"Thank you, God." and then he's like grabbing it out of the air and stuffing it down his shirt and everything like that. I wonder if he actually walked away with any money. I mean, he needs a new suit now, we've already established.
You know, he filled his whole shirt with it. I'm sure he walked away with some.
But so we've now got the daring rescue because Jun Tao has been thrown over the edge and killed. Li is hanging on for his life. And so Carter gets the idea to take one of the huge tapestries that's hanging from the ceiling and drag it underneath him to cushion his fall. And he slides down the tapestry. And we get the line from Carter, "Next time, be polite to my nuts." What does that mean? What does it mean to be polite to his nuts?
He wants him to kiss his nuts. That's what it is.
Okay.
Because Li kisses him on the cheek and he goes, "Hey, what the hell is that?" And he goes, "I was just being polite." And he goes, "Well, be polite to my nuts."
Yeah. So is that what he's saying?
He's want, yeah. Like,
okay.
Or it's
he's hitting
he got,
on him?
You just he, got he, kicked in the nuts. He's like, next time, watch out.
He asks Johnson what panties she's wearing. He wants Li to kiss his nuts.
Yeah.
So Li gives the necklace back to Su Yang. How is it still attached? Like, he pulled it right off of the waitress's neck. You think the clasp should be broken?
It's Hollywood.
Okay.
How else are you supposed to take off your dog tags? You rip them off. You don't go for the clasp. What are you, a pussy? It's a necklace thing.
So did he tie it in a knot to hang it back over her neck, though?
No, the clasp was perfectly fine. Okay. It was intended that way.
All right. It's a breakaway
thing. Okay. Yeah, it's a movie thing.
Okay. So then we get the ending of our movie here where we find out that Li and Carter are going to go to Hong Kong together and the FBI offers Carter a job and he tells them they can shove it because he's LAPD. And boy, first class is a thing of its time. Like, you don't see first classes like that anymore with the staircase and everything like that. That's, you know.
Well, yeah, we don't.
Yeah.
I'm sure people do.
Well, no, you still have to walk through first class in the flights to get to where I sit. In steerage.
Yeah, I've never seen a first class like
with,
that.
With the staircase, yeah. I mean, but you saw it in Wedding Singer as well.
There's a lot of, like, luxury first class videos on YouTube and stuff like that, so I have seen a few.
Like the pods?
Well, yeah, exactly. You get your own pods, you get your own, like, hotel room on the plane, there's a stand-up bar and shit, so I'd imagine there's still spiral staircases on planes. Like, they put bathrooms in planes so you can have a shower mid-flight.
That, I don't think I'd want to do that.
Oh, yeah, but people do, and you have to book a time for it. Jeez. Like, they do it on, like, 12-hour flights where, like, yeah, you can just go to their really big bathroom and they have a sauna and a shower and shit, yeah. It's like a popular thing.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Costs like $20,000 for a ticket, though.
But once again, yeah, he came on a private plane and he's leaving on a commercial flight, even if it is first class. And we find out that Carter knows a little bit of Chinese just so that we can have the throwback line of, just because I choose not to speak Chinese doesn't mean I don't know Chinese or whatever.
You assumed.
But I love in the blooper reel, though, just how hard it is for him to say shishini.
Yeah.
But this is from the same guy that had trouble saying Chelsea Clinton, so.
Chelsea Grammar!
And then we get the blooper reel, and then the end. And that is Rush Hour. Now, Colin, Chris, on IMDb, it scored 7.0 out of 10. It has a Metascore of 60. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 61% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 78%. And fun fact, apparently this movie was the reason that Rotten Tomatoes actually exists.
Oh, wow.
The site founder was a big Jackie Chan fan who wanted somewhere to collect reviews for his Hong Kong movies when they hit America. And so the site was put up shortly before this movie was released. So
nice.
This movie has a tie-in with Rotten Tomatoes. So, But it only got 78% from the audience on Rotten Tomatoes.
Whack.
But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a dusty Jackie Chan kick to the face. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, here we go. Jacob B, 4 out of 5 stars, says, "While Rush Hour's plot is formulaic and there's a pretty unhealthy dose of casually racist humor with a touch of misogyny, the solid dynamic between the two leads, legitimately funny comedy when not having one minority take paw shots at another minority, a memorable sequence with the song War, and a really fun fight choreography and stunts during the action sequences more than makes up for this buddy cop comedy's faults."
Okay, yeah. War. Good God, yeah. Y'all, what it is a good for, absolutely nothing.
Say it again.
Good God, you all.
You all.
Rotten Tomatoes super reviewer Kevin M.W. gave the movie 2.5 out of 5 stars and said, "While this formulaic bit of buddy cop comedy kinda works, It kind of works on the back of Chris Tucker's black man playing blackface for the modern day ghetto riffing, which is practically nonstop throughout the piece. It's embarrassing as hell that Hollywood still plays this card and that black guys still need to play it to get work. I thought that some Ching Chang Chinese slur was a certainty, given Tucker's obvious pandering to white ideas of what black people act and sound like, but no doubt Jackie Chan thankfully nixed that, but for some little throwaways here and there. There's some story about catching kidnappers, but it's only a cover for Tucker's movie-long blackface routine. Still, wow. It was successful, so I must be part of the extreme minority to find this yuck-yuck flippancy offensive. In this day and age, only about 20 years ago.
Wow, that's a lot to unpack there. I like how both of those reviews started off with the phrase, this formulaic buddy cop movie. For a second there, I thought you were reading the same review.
Yeah, no.
Because it starts off with like the exact same sentence. Okay, yeah.
All right, two more. Anthony F., 2 out of 5 stars, says, I understand that this movie was made in the turn of this century Hollywood, but the degree of racism and racially insensitive stereotypes for the sake of comedy is still remarkable. Other than that, this is a subpar, unimaginative buddy cop movie, with the only positive thing being the undeniable physical prowess of Jackie Chan. If you choose to endure the cringeworthy dialogue, Chan's stunts are worth watching.
I don't, you know, so one thing I think about Chris Tucker, though, is the fact that that one guy just before went really hard on, like, the black guy doing blackface or whatever it was that he said. And it's kind of like, well, I've seen Friday and I've seen The Fifth Element. He plays the same character in every one of his movies. So is he always playing this supposed racial stereotype?
Yeah.
Or is that just who Chris Rocker, yeah. Chris Tucker fucking is? Like, it's.
Yeah, that is true. Chris that Rocker, is an interesting. Because it's like. Yeah, like, I don't know. I know I've heard people talk about that as being a problem, where it's like you kind of have to, like, you have to play into the stereotype.
You have to hood it up.
Yeah.
You don't even hood it up in his
case. But when it comes to Chris Tucker, I do almost kind of just feel like that might just be Chris Tucker, but it's hard to know where it starts.
Yeah.
Is he doing that because that's him, or is he doing that because
that's what gets him the role?
That's how it started, and that's what gets him, and people like it, and that's what gets him the roles. I don't know.
Yeah, it's difficult. Because I know Friday, it's Friday. You ain't got shit to do.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's almost like Carter is the character that he plays in Friday, but he's decided, now I'm going to be a cop.
Yeah.
but he still has his cousin that he's not busting, and he has the guy that he sold the dime bag of weed to, you know?
Yeah. All right, let's end with a positive. Jordan M. gave the movie 3.5 out of 5 stars.
And says, that's the positive. Okay. Yeah. 3.5, okay. Low
says,
bar.
It's impossible to hate a movie that features Jackie's unique comedic fight scenes, even when it doesn't have quite enough of them, and even when the underlying plot is as formulaic as it gets, and even when his co-star is concentrating so hard on speaking in as obnoxious a way as humanly possible. The main thing supporting this effort to win over American audiences was the excellent film score and soundtrack. Everything else just seemed to get in his way, right down to the shoddy editing. A serious tour de force in what was essentially his debut in the American market.
Okay.
If I had to aggregate all the reviews into just one word, I guess it would have to be formulaic.
Formulaic. That seems to be the connecting tissue right there for sure. Well, okay, so we've got for numbers, we've got 7 and 78 from the audience and 61 and 60 from the critics. Let's start with Chris. It was one of your favorite movies.
Definitely hasn't aged well. Yeah. I can agree with some of the reviews there, but it's not that bad. It's definitely playful. and at a breezy hour and a half, man, I mean, it's impossible not to justify sitting down and watching it. It's a great time, and you'll be in and out like nothing. It's like watching a TV show nowadays. It's nothing.
Yeah.
Well, and even with the idea of formulaic, that's what works. When you go to see a buddy cop movie, that's what you want. You just want to take person A and person B and slot them into different jokes or different scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, so I can kind of see how this is a fun dynamic that they had. But yeah, I can also see where the problems lie with this movie these days a little bit. For sure. You know, playful racism, sure. But how playful is it these days, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Colin, what about you?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. I still love it. Mm-hmm. I still, like, really think it's a fun movie. I would agree with Chris. Like, I think it's just, like, a fun, playful movie to watch. It's one of those movies, even when I'm scrolling through Netflix, when I see it, I'm like, oh, yeah, Rush Hour.
Yeah.
Like, I was so excited even when it came on to Netflix, because for the longest time they've had Rush Hour 3, but it was only recently that they got the first two.
Yeah.
And I remember being excited to see it when it was first on there. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It was kind of like, I didn't really even think anything of it until I read a lot of those reviews. So I think for me, it's almost like the next time I watch it, I might watch it with a little bit more of a critical eye on that end. It's always hard with movies like that, just because there's the nostalgia factor,
mm-hmm.
which it's difficult to overcome what we don't like today,
mm-hmm.
when I remember liking it so fondly back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can kind of like see, yeah, I can see how like certain things, but it seems like, I don't know how to say it. I don't even want to say it, but it's like, it seems like even the racism, it seems like innocent. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even want to say that. That sounds gross to say.
Yeah, no, but like, I know what you mean. Yeah. It's like when I said in Ace Ventura that I know this is probably offensive in some way, mm-hmm. but I don't think it came from a place of hate.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the same way that I felt like this, is that I think they were taking playful jabs at each other.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm the same way. I have trouble separating that nostalgia, because it's Jackie Chan doing Jackie Chan shit, which is always great. And Chris Tucker, there are some of those comedians like him, like Kevin Hart and Martin Lawrence, which are the loud, obnoxious sidekicks, you know, having watched Bad Boys so recently as well. And I really had enough of Martin Lawrence by the end of that movie. But there's something that's still endearing about Chris Tucker, even though I know he's annoying as shit.
Yeah.
It's because he's playing to the stereotypes developed by Hollywood specifically for you, a 40-year-old white man. So yeah. Maybe gain some perspective before you talk, thank you.
That's right.
God.
I guess, yeah, as a 40-year-old white man, I like blackface. Is that
you like the archetype that he's been developed by white Hollywood to portray?
This is going off the rails.
tough to know what to say.
Yeah. I mean, it almost feels like maybe Chris wasn't the guest we should have had on this one. Maybe we should have had Kingsley back for this one, so that we have all three perspectives, you know, from the director to Chris Tucker to Jackie Chan. We have a perspective on all three. But I can understand what most of those reviews are saying, but I don't know whether Rush Hour needs to be, like, canceled.
Like, yeah.
You know, like,
That's the thing. It's like, is anybody really watching Rush Hour and being offended?
Yeah.
Like, that would be my question. Like, does somebody watch Rush Hour and feel, like, hurt or offended by it? Like, I don't think so.
It's definitely not a worthwhile cross to die on.
I think it's still up there. I think it would still be up there no matter what with, like, mm-hmm. sure, I don't know. It's probably, like, the top five at least of, like, buddy cop movies.
Just below Turner and Hooch.
So do either of you want to give it a number?
10 out of 10, baby.
10 out of 10.
I love, well,
you know, I gotta stop asking Chris that question. What about you,
know,
Colin?
9 out of 10. 9 out of 10. I was offended.
I'd probably go 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10 still. Yeah.
I think maybe this is the way that I would look at it. It's a movie that could maybe use a disclaimer that says, hey, this uses some outdated language. See, I don't even necessarily agree with that, but
you PC people trying to censor my...
To be honest, my main gripe with the movie has nothing to even do with Chris Tucker or Jackie Chan. It's more to do with how they treat...
Johnson?
The Johnson. Yeah, like, I find that the more...
The misogyny is your bigger issue.
Problematic issue in this movie. And then just... Kind of, like, the thing I noticed more is just, like, and even talking about it now, is the plot could have been tightened up a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things, too, that it's, like, watching this movie, I was kind of shocked to find all the plot holes that I did, because I never actually analyzed this movie. It's one of those that you turn on and you go, ha, 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 he said he couldn't understand any of the words coming out of his mouth. That's funny.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, no, see, and I think I could probably fall in the 80% range myself as well. I mean,
it's a good movie.
It's enjoyable. Yeah, it's still a good buddy cop movie. And
it's an hour and a half, people. Come on, just watch it.
Well, there we go. That's Rush Hour, and that's our show for this week. A big thank you to our guest this week, Chris Wells. Chris, you always seem to find one last little bit of knowledge you want to drop on us or anything. Is there anything that we missed?
There was one thing that I meant to say at the beginning, but, you know, I kind of paused because I don't know. I feel like I came up with a better tagline for the movie.
Okay.
But now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like it also is one of those things where it's just kind of fits for most buddy cop movies. But, these guys bring a whole new meaning to the term good cop, bad cop, because Jackie Chan is a by-the-books cop and Chris Tucker isn't. Mm. But, you know, it's kind of just all buddy cop movies.
But then we also looked at the fact that it seems like Jackie Chan was also kind of a bad cop in the beginning, too.
I think I wrote that down after the scene where they were interrogating Clive at the prison or whatever, and he came in trying to be the bad cop, and then Jackie Chan came in and showed him the photo.
There we go.
Yeah. Okay. So there was a little context to it.
Cop with a heart.
Exactly.
So if you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is to tell your friends, share our posts. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast trying to get noticed in the huge sea out there. We're not celebrities. We're not Conan O'Brien or The Office Ladies or Bob Saget or Michael Rosenbaum or J.B. Smoove or...
Getting all those tags.
Yeah, we're not any of those people. We are not celebrities, so every single new listener and every single fan means the world to us. You have no idea. Or if you want to go above and beyond to help us and use the algorithms of Apple Podcasts to drive people to notice our show, go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on, like Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. It doesn't matter what you say, but give us 5 stars and just help drive us up the charts. I don't know why it does it. Those algorithms are messed up, but it helps us get noticed.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iusedtolikethisone.com. There you can find links to all our podcast episodes as well as our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have Twitter. Go check out all Sean's funny memes. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us by email at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. Drop us a line and let us know which ones you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about it on our show.
And if you would like to be a producer of the show, get a shout out and donate to us, you can go to patreon.com/iusedtolikethisone and become part of our Patreon community. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.